Well, this is what I've just read is a vision of something that hasn't happened yet. This is something that's going to happen. This white throne and the dead before the throne being judged. And it hasn't happened yet, but it will happen. And I'll be there, and you'll be there, and your parents will be there, and your grandparents, and your brothers and your sisters, and your children, and your friends, and your colleagues. Everybody will be there. And if I asked what each person who is there before the throne, what is their greatest need? What is their greatest need? It would be that their names were written in the Lamb's Book of Life. That their names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And nothing else will matter. Jesus said to his disciples after he sent them out to cast out demons and to carry out miracles, and they returned rejoicing in what they'd done. Then he said, "Behold, I have given you authority to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall hurt you. Nevertheless, do not rejoice in this. The spirits are subject to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven." And if our names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life, and we're sure of that, then that should be our greatest joy. That is a thing which should fill our hearts with joy and thankfulness to Christ. That our names are in the Lamb's Book of Life. Well, I'm just going to take that thought. What is our greatest need? I'm going to take that thought as we turn to Mark chapter 5. I'm just going to read the first part of the account that Baz brought to us. I'm going to think about the lady with the issue of blood. So I'm going to read from verse 21 to verse 34. "And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, 'My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live.' And he went with him. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years and who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, 'If I touch even his garments, I will be made well.' And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, 'Who touched my garments?' And his disciples said to him, 'You see the crowd pressing all around you, and yet you say, "Who touched me?" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, 'Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease.'" So this lady has become ill. She has this condition, and it's a debilitating condition that she's had for years. It's getting worse. She hears of Jesus, she follows him, she touches him, and she's healed. And there's no name recorded. We don't know her name, unlike Jairus, who's mentioned before this. We don't know her name. And in her condition, we must feel great sympathy for her. But because she was a real person, this is an account of a real person, then we know that she had a past. That there was a time before she was ill. She's been ill for 12 years, but before that she wasn't ill. We know she had money because she spent it all on doctors. So she has a past. And there was a time when she was well, and she had money. She might have been a business person, a commercial person. She may have had an inheritance, who knows, but she had money. And she fitted in with her local culture. She lived in Galilee, and she would have been a woman of her time. She would have been part of the religious culture. She would have gone to the temple to pray. She would have fitted in with her neighbours and her friends and her family, and had a life, and just a woman of her time. And she would have looked forward. She would have looked forward to her business doing well, getting more money, her relationships being good, perhaps marriage, perhaps children. Things would have come up that she wanted to do. She would have had plans for her future. And she would have thought about the things she needed to make her happy. And we're like that, aren't we? We often have long periods in our life where things are going well. We are well, and we have the money we need, and life is pretty good. And we think about the things we need to make it better. And if somebody said to her, "What is your greatest need?" at that time, she might have said, "I need a husband." She might have said, "I need my parents to get on better." She might have said, "My friend's ill. I would like them to be cured." There'd be all sorts of circumstances that she would have thought about. And if I say to you, "What's your greatest need?" Well, you might say, "Life's pretty good. But I would like a better job. I would like a better house. I would like my friends who are not well to be made well. I would like this relationship I'm having trouble with to be sorted out." And they're the kind of things we pray for. I mean, that, I speak of that from my own experience. That's how I would pray. That's how I often pray, for things that would make life better. But we read, didn't we, that her greatest need is actually that her name be written in the Lamb's Book of Life. That is her greatest need. When things were easy for her in her life, that was her need then. But she wasn't seeking it then, because she didn't feel the urgency of it. But that was her greatest need. But then life changed, didn't it? Life changed. This condition started, this issue of blood started, and it must have been concerning for her. Must have been. And I've no doubt she prayed about it, no doubt about that. She'll have worried about it, and she'll have tried to juggle her life. She'll have tried to pursue her business, her commerce, her interests, whatever they were, and deal with this new condition that she had. But she wouldn't have been too worried, because she had money, and friends, and, you know, this thing started, I'm sure it would stop, although it must have been painful and uncomfortable. But she wouldn't have been too worried. And her prayers would slowly, as time went on, would move away from all those things in her life, would move slowly down to that one thing, until that one thing becomes the thing she's concerned about. That condition is a thing she's concerned about. If only that was resolved, then her life would be sorted out and she would be fine. And we can do that, can't we? We have all sorts of things that we worry about, paper cuts that we worry about. And we feel terrible about them. But then something really serious happens, and everything's brought into focus, and all our attention comes down to that one thing. That if only that is sorted out, then we'll be happy. If only that condition is taken away, we'll be happy. If only that circumstance is removed, we'll be happy, whatever that is. And her focus would have come down from all her normal worries down to this condition. You know, after 3 months, she must have been desperate. After 6 months, she must have been terrible. And to go to doctors in those days, there's no anaesthetic. They don't really know what they're doing. Who knows what happened? And then after the doctors, you become more desperate and you go to the, I don't know what you call them now, the charlatans, the quacks, the people who promise all sorts for money but don't deliver anything. And she must have gone to the temple, I would think, and offered sacrifices, still wasn't healed. And it goes on year after year till all her money's gone. And she's not getting better, she's getting worse. She's anemic, she's in pain and losing hope. But it's worse, isn't it? It's worse than that, because she would consider herself to be unclean, and her friends would consider her to be unclean, and the people in her community would consider her to be unclean. And I wonder what you think about that. Because I often do this funny thing when I'm reading the Bible, that I read something and then I think, oh well, of course they thought that, but we know now that that wasn't the case. She had an issue of blood, she was ill. That's a physical thing, it doesn't make her unclean, does it? You know, how silly of those people then thinking that. But actually the reason people thought that was because of what God said. In Leviticus 15, if you want to turn to that, God is very clear. Leviticus 15, verse 25 to 27. It says, if a woman has a discharge of blood for many days, not at the time of her menstrual impurity, or if she has a discharge about the time of her, beyond the time of her impurity, all the days of the discharge she shall continue in uncleanness. As in the days of her impurity, she shall be unclean. Every bed on which she lies, all the days of her discharge shall be to her as the bed of her impurity. And everything on which she sits shall be unclean, as in the uncleanness of her menstrual impurity. And whoever touches these things shall be unclean, and shall wash his clothes, and bathe himself in water, and be unclean until the evening. So for this 12 years, not only is she suffering physically, but she is unclean. And that isn't just within herself, that is affecting everybody around her. She has to tell people that she's unclean. She has to give people a chance to get out of the way. She has to warn people if she's going to visit them that she's unclean, because they're going to have to wash everything she's sat on and touched. And she can't go and pray in the temple where the women pray. Not allowed in there. And it must have been awful for her. So she's got through this awful physical condition, and she's an outcast as well. And you think, well, that doesn't seem fair, does it? Why does God make her unclean as well to suffer all these things? But in the time that she was living, and previously, in the previous 1,000 years or so since Moses, the lives of the Jews were filled with ceremonies and rituals to do with being clean or unclean. Clean, unclean, clean, unclean. And they're continually thinking about whether they are clean or unclean. And actually, this lady was unclean because she was a sinner. Everybody's unclean. Everybody is. But she's been reminded of it. She's been reminded of that. And all the people who would avoid her and stay out of the way because they felt they were clean, were wrong. They were blind. So she was the only one really who had an accurate picture of her spiritual state. She was indeed unclean. And although we don't have those laws today, if we have sin in our lives that hasn't been dealt with, then we're unclean. And if we're not a Christian, and you move, you're not a Christian, you move in circles that are not Christian, everybody's unclean and everybody's polluting everybody else, and you don't realise it, but you're unclean. If you are a Christian and you have a sin that you're not dealing with, then that sin makes you unclean. It's like being covered in axle grease. If I've been working on my motorbike and I come into the kitchen and I'm all black, and Alison's going, oh, wash your hands, wash your hands. Because you know everything you touch is going to leave black marks all over it. And sin is like that. You have a short temper. Do you think that doesn't affect other people? Do you think it doesn't affect your children? Do you think it doesn't affect your wife or your husband? You're irritable when you reply to something. Has that no effect on other people? You hate somebody. Does not affect other people. You might think it doesn't, but it does. It leaves marks and a mess everywhere. You're greedy. Greedy for things or food or drink or whatever. You think that has no effect on the people around you. You're selfish. Do you think that has no effect? Of course it does. All these things affect everybody around you. And if sin isn't dealt with, then that uncleanness does spread. So here's this lady. She's ill. She's been ill for 12 years. She's struggling with that. She's suffering with that. And she's unclean. And so socially, she's struggling as well. Must have been an awful time she's been through. But having said all that, what is her greatest need? It's to have her name written in the Lamb's Book of Life. That is her greatest need. It still is her greatest need. When she stands before the throne of Christ, which she will one day, she hasn't done that yet, but she will one day stand before the throne of Christ. And the only thing she will care about is that her name is in the Lamb's Book of Life. Well, at the end of the 12 years, I would think she's gone from having an easy life to having a hard life. And I would say now that for her, her life is hopeless. Her money's gone. She's an outcast. And she's getting worse. She's getting more and more ill. There is no real hope. I wouldn't think she looks forward to life. I wouldn't think she's making plans. She won't be worrying too much about business or making plans about how she's going to make a living in the future. She probably looks back to when life was easy and when she had no problems, to when she was fit and healthy and life seemed good. And it made me think, when I was thinking about that, it made me think about when we become old. So if you're young, you might want to switch off now, but I shouldn't, because you're the ones who don't know about this. And if you're old, you know this. But when you get old, you can start to think about your past, and your plans, etc., for the future shrink and shrink and shrink. And when you're very old, you don't really think about the future because you become weak, a bit confused, it's hard to make decisions and think about things. You ache, and you're tired, and life's just really hard. And you begin to think about the future is after you die. And it can be very frightening. It can be very frightening because you can get through the whole of life avoiding that. So you don't really care about the Lamb's Book of Life. You don't really care about the books in heaven. because you can put it to the back of your mind and you can go through life until finally you can't get around it. You are going to die. It becomes a reality. And you know that there are books. You know that everything you've said and done in the past will be measured. And it's frightening. It's frightening. And the only thing that will give you peace about death in your old age is knowing that your name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Well, here's this lady. She's very ill, she's very weak and poor, and she's an outcast. And her life is hopeless. But then something happens. She hears about Jesus. She hears about him. He's proclaiming the gospel. He's healing the leper and the paralyzed. He's given sight to the blind and hearing to the deaf. He's driving out demons. He's calming the storm. And she's heard about him, and her heart must have leapt inside her. Here was hope. And here was faith. In some strange way, hearing about Jesus affects her differently than all those crowds. When Jesus is walking along, we'll come to it in a minute, but Jesus is walking along, he's being jostled and pushed and knocked into and tugged by all sorts of people. It has no effect on them because they don't understand that he's the Son of God, that he is God on earth. But in some strange way, she hears about Jesus and she knows that he can cure her. She knows that straight away. She knows that he's the Son of God. And it gives her hope and faith. And where did that faith come from that she has? She has faith. She has faith. Where did it come from? Well, it came from God. God gave it to her. God gave her the faith to seek Jesus to be cured. So she hears about Jesus and her heart must have leapt. And she must have had 1,000 questions about who he was and what he would do. But she doesn't settle for hearing about Jesus. It's no good just hearing about him. You have to go to him. And that's what she did. She went to him. And not like Jairus. Jairus, read at the beginning of the account, he went and the crowds parted. Here comes Jairus. And he went up to Jesus and spoke to him face to face. Not like that. Because she felt herself to be unclean. She was unclean. If she went out, people would tell her to go away. She wouldn't be able to get to Jesus. She must have gone incognito. That must have been terrifying. Because if somebody recognised her, it would have started a massive hoo-ha. That who's she? What's she doing here? She shouldn't be here. Don't touch her. Don't let her touch anybody. This is terrible. And what about when she got to Jesus? What if he turned around and recognised her and said, go away, you're unclean? That would be terrible, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be terrible? Isn't it fantastic that it doesn't matter, if you're not saved, it doesn't matter how unclean you feel yourself to be. It doesn't matter. You can go to Jesus. It doesn't matter what other people say. It doesn't matter what you feel about yourself. You can go to Jesus. You can go to him. And she did, and she went to him with the intention of reaching out and touching his garment, because she knew she would be healed. She's amazing, because if she went to anybody else and reached out and touched their garment, what would happen? They would be unclean, wouldn't they? She would reach out and they would be unclean. But she's reached out and touched Jesus. And she's become clean. That's like having a drop of water, a drop of clean water, and dropping it in the ocean. And the ocean becomes clean water. That's what it's like. She's reached out and touched his garment, the garment of God. She reached out and touched him, and she's been made clean. And something's happened, because something has gone from Jesus to this lady. It didn't go. There's 1,000 of the people pressing, crushing, pushing. Nothing went to them. They didn't receive anything, but something has gone from Jesus. His spirit has gone from him into her. She's been made clean. She's saved. And her name is in the Lamb's Book of Life. Well, she speaks to him. He says, your faith has made you clean. And she is clean. She's healed. And she's saved. In Matthew 7, verses 2 and 3, some lepers came to Jesus. And behold, a leper came to him and knelt before him, saying, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I will, be clean. So she no longer feared life, and she would no longer fear death. She grew older, no doubt became infirm, had other issues, all sorts of things. And she died. And she'll stand before the throne on that great day, knowing that when the books are opened, her life will be in there. But when the Lamb's Book of Life is opened, her name will be in there as well. And so I'd encourage you, whatever your life is like, is your life easy, you need to come to Jesus in faith. Is your life hard? Well, you need to come to Jesus in faith. Is your life hopeless? Well, you need to come to Jesus in faith. You need to reach out and touch him and be made clean. Amen.